Thank you.
Yes. And for the next, you kind of know the drill. For the next 45 minutes or so, we'll ask some questions. Before we do that, I invite you to make an opening statement. We are rather informal. You can address us as you would like, and we'll probably respond. So, so I invite you to make an opening statement. As we get close to the end, I will try to let you know that we're, you know, down to the last few questions, and then at the end, I'll ask you to make a closing statement as well. So,
very good. Well, thank you very much to all of you for allowing me the opportunity to speak with you again today. I'm very excited about the opportunity. My name is Kelly Smith, and I'd like to take a few minutes to tell you a little bit about myself and my personal and professional background. I've been married to my wife, Chris, for 27 years. She is a registered nurse, and we're blessed to have three children, all completing college. Abby is a third-year doctor of podiatry at Des Moines University. Our daughter Emily is a graduate of University of Chicago, working in policy for 1 year, and then is now teaching English learner language students in the New York City public schools and enjoying quite an experience with hurricanes and the New York City schools. And our son Joe, our youngest, has last attended the University of Minnesota Duluth. He's currently working as a personal care attendant. I'm currently in my 21st year as a school district superintendent in Minnesota, serving the communities of Stewart and then a combined district of Double Lake, Wendell, Hoffman, Kensington, and Barrett, which were called the West Central Area Schools, up in Fergus Falls territory. And we put the district together into a unified district. Then Red Wing Schools for 3 years, and I'm currently in my ninth year at the Belle Plaine Schools, on the edge of the seven-county metro area between Minneapolis and Mankato. I also served the communities of Gibbon, Fairfax, Winthrop for a number of years as a math and computer teacher, coach, business manager, and assistant superintendent, as well as activities director. During that time, my wife and I were part owners of Lyle's Cafe. If you've ever been down Highway 19, heading out to Marshall, Minnesota, so we had a wonderful and thankfully brief experiences with the owners during that establishment with our partners for 5 years. I've been involved with the University of Minnesota really since my youth, growing up in southwest Minnesota in Cottonwood near Marshall, being active in the 4-H programs out there in Lyon County. When I was at West Central Area Schools in Elbow Lake and Grant County, my children were all active in 4-H, and my wife and I were active as 4-H parents there as well. I attended the University of Minnesota Morris and majored in mathematics with a minor in business. We have university degrees throughout my family, my brother who's a graduate from the St. Paul campus with a business degree. His wife is a med school graduate. My other brother is a vet school graduate. And we have a sister-in-law who graduated from UMD, so I'm pretty familiar with the various campuses as part of the university system. I myself received my doctorate of education from the University of Minnesota in 2003 in educational leadership, and I'm currently a member of the University Alumni Association. I believe my experience as a school superintendent has given me a great background in governance, working with school boards ranging from 6 to 25 members, and budgets from $8 to $24 million. I've been directly involved in contract negotiations with union and non-union bargaining groups. I've worked extensively in policy development, financial planning, and academic achievement. I have participated with educational organizations such as Minnesota Rural Education Association as a board member and legislative committee member, the Schools for Equity in Education, and the Minnesota Association of School Administrators as a board member, legislative committee member, executive committee member. Currently, I'm serving as the past president of the organization after having served as president during the 2011-12 school year. Throughout the years, I've also been involved in numerous civic committees and councils, including planning and zoning, chair of the Grant County Child and Youth Council, the Goody County Collaborative Council, and chair of the Scott County Family Network. I've served on the Red Wing United Way Board and YMCA Board as well while residing in Red Wing. Currently, I'm an active member of SCALE, which is the Scott County Association for Leadership and Efficiency. That is an organization that seeks to collaborate amongst city, township, county, and school district officials to find efficiencies in the ways government can operate. In fact, a number of us are presenting at the upcoming MSBA, Minnesota School Boards Association conference here at the end of next week about that program. And locally, I've just finished serving my second consecutive term as president of the Belle Plaine Rotary Club, not because I did such a great job, but someone bowed out at the last moment, and I was forced to serve a second term and did so somewhat willingly.
It happens.
As a school superintendent and former business manager, I have 25 years of experience and responsibility for the entire school district budget. Three of the districts that I moved to during my career were in statutory operating debt when I arrived in those districts. That's a term that indicates they have deficit fund balances and they are spending more than they are bringing in. And a problem we're hearing more about in governmental entities all the time. But through the efforts of school boards and administration, all three of those districts had returned to financial stability as I left those communities. Through my years as a superintendent, I feel I've shown to be a collaborative leader who has been interested first and foremost in the academic growth of all students while recognizing the limiting constraints of the financial resources that we have. I've helped communities through the process of school district consolidations, building projects, operating levy efforts, and through a difficult 17-day teacher strike. I feel that my strengths continue to be my ability to help build consensus toward a solution, my ability to evaluate problems from a variety of perspectives, and my ability to promote change within the organization. The Board of Regents is the policy-making body of the University of Minnesota. The board approves the vision and priorities of the university based on the mission of the university. And the board is responsible for hiring and evaluating the president of the university, a major function that they have. As an individual regent, we are charged with upholding the honor and status of the university. An individual regent may seek appropriate information from administration and others regarding the needs of the university. Individual regents are also expected to keep well-informed of board meeting agenda items, actively participate in board and committee meetings, and take action in the best interest of the university as a whole, and then recognize the actions of the full board as we move forward. And why I would like to become a regent, I've had a long-term respect and admiration for the university and believe that the success of our state is due in part to the success of the University of Minnesota. I believe that I can bring a strong education background with me as a regent and would work diligently to continue to strengthen preschool through undergraduate degree programs within Minnesota. I realize that the university has a primary goal to become one of the top three public research institutions in the United States. While progress has been made toward that achievement, there remains much work to be done. A successful conclusion to my term as a regent would be reflected in the achievement of this goal or noticeable continued advancement toward that goal. Another major area that I would use to judge my success would be the continued affordability of a post-secondary education at the university during difficult financial times. Certainly an area that has received much attention and scrutiny in the past several years. Finally, I've found that throughout my life, I've been most successful at tasks for which I have deep passion I have absolutely no doubt that my deep passion for the University of Minnesota and my real-life experiences in education would allow me to ably serve this great institution as a member of the Board of Regents. Again, I thank you for the opportunity to visit with you once again today, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you. Well, I'll start off with an opening question. Since you're in a little bit of a unique position in that you're with us 2 years after the last interview, what issues do you think have changed from 2 years ago to today that would be more of a priority? You mentioned the goal of the university to be a top research institution. Anything else that you can add?
Well, I think there's not just the University of Minnesota. All colleges are struggling with the MOOC, the massive open online curriculums that are out there. And I think that's a debate the university is going to be having as well. Personally, in my background as school superintendent, we've had some of those same debates. How do students best learn? And we're really finding a blend happens to be the best, and I strongly believe that. Strictly online without a lot of human interaction is not always the greatest learning environment. I still strongly believe there needs to be that personal connection to make learning relevant. So I think that's something that's really within the last 2 years has exploded on the scene. I don't think it was even on the radar 2 years ago when I was here. So that's one. I think another slight change has been just the interaction between the university and the legislature. I think it was the last couple of days an article that the university was now going to get $4.8 million in additional funding because they met some benchmarks. And that's a different way of doing business than the university has had in the past. I think from what I have read, and I'm certainly on the outside, it sounds like President Kaler has embraced that within reason, and I'm happy to see that they satisfied five of the criteria and they needed to meet three to receive that additional funding. So that's a little different level of accountability that the university had not operated under before. So something else to keep an eye on as we move forward. Okay.
Thank you. Jerry.
Yeah, I would like to kind of maybe continue this a little bit. You listed as your two most important aspects for the university, one being the research you just talked about. The other thing is how to keep the tuition down for the students. And maybe I'll stop there because I have another thing I want to add to that. But what methods do you think you can go about maintaining keeping it at a reasonable level of tuition for the students?
Well, I think that's always the constant balancing act that administration has, trying to provide the number of programs that students are desiring and yet in an affordable manner. Certainly the level of state contributions toward the university has declined, and that's been part of the raising tuition. I think that discussion needs to continue. What is the appropriate level of state funding for our not just the University of Minnesota, but for our higher ed institutions? But then we also have to continue to offer a quality product that is seen as worthwhile for whatever that tuition rate ends up being. I don't have any specific solutions. I think it's a constant, again, balancing act between what we can afford to offer and at what breaking point will students and families say that's more than I can afford and I have to look elsewhere for an education.
And just to add to that, you mentioned that the legislative funding is an issue, but the legislative funding we know historically has gradually gone from estimates more than 50% of budget at one time to now being 15%. And with that in mind, what do you see as the future of finance or funding sources What are they for the university?
How would you go about
financing this institution?
I think one of the challenges that was put to the university last time was make financial aid more accessible for students, and I think an extra effort has been put into private funding for scholarships and other programs. So I think that's an area that certainly will continue to grow and need to continue to grow in the future. I still personally believe that the state of Minnesota does need to decide if they value what the University of Minnesota brings to the table and is willing to try to move back up to closer to the level of funding that it has had in the past. That's not going to happen overnight, but I think we have to stop the direction that it's going in right now and try to turn it to start moving in the other direction. Those are, and then I'll go back to bottom line, the university needs to produce a quality product, which there is a demand for, and that'll help some of those other things happen.
Thank you.
George.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Smith, you've been a superintendent, dealt with school boards. Now you're applying for a board position. What do you see your role to be as a regent in relationship to the president of the university, and how is that alike and different from your position as a superintendent dealing with school board?
Yeah, that's always an interesting mix, and having served on the board for my statewide superintendent organization, MASA, we found that sometimes it's difficult to step into a board role versus that administrative role. When we have a board meeting with 18 of us around the table, everybody is problem solvers and fixers, and they want to get in and fix the problem instead of set the vision and priorities and then look to administration to take it from there. So I see that's the real critical difference. As a board member, you are setting the direction of the university and the priorities for the near future. We have our mission to guide us, and then we hand that directive over to administration, and then they take care of the planning for making that vision happen.
David?
Thank you.
Kelly, I'm going to reach into the past, but it'll be a learning experience. You were a Red Wing superintendent during a time when there was a teacher strike, I believe, over health care benefits. I'm wondering if you can tell us how you managed through that process, how you handled that, what lessons you learned, and how you might apply them as a regent.
Sure. That is a part of a time in my life I remember very well. It was a long 17 days and actually a long year leading up to the point that strike actually evolved. I'm going to go back a little before the time of the strike. I arrived in Red Wing July 1st of 2001, and within 2 weeks I came home and told my spouse, you know what, I just don't have a good feel for this. It seems like battle lines are already drawn. And I'll go back a little further. I was offered the job in early February. We had our insurance renewal came due in March, and we had a 68% insurance premium increase.
We being Red Wing?
Red Wing. So, and the current contract had the district had a percentage, so we covered the majority of that. Well, Red Wing also, upon my arrival, was found to be in statutory operating debt. We were in, they thought they were climbing out, they were going back in instead. So we were broke, had this significant health insurance, and as a board and superintendent, our position was we needed some financial changes in the contract to continue to exist as an organization. Obviously, that was a difficult pill to swallow for our teachers group, and they opted to exert their right and go out on strike. I would qualify that we had five other groups who petitioned to strike following behind them, kind of based on the same issue. They did not do that because we were out of school anyway. It would have been a formality for them at that point. It's about compromise in the end. We, as a board, did not get everything we wanted. We thought we had some structural changes in health insurance that allowed us to put some, it wasn't a complete cap on our health insurance costs that we were asking for, but we got partway toward that goal and set the table to make further enhancements into the future. It was very stressful for everybody in, but if you want to see friends disappear, have a strike. And, suddenly there's not many people to talk to because nobody wanted to side against teachers or, you know, it was a very, the whole community is put in a very difficult position. But ultimately it resulted in a compromise that some board members did not vote for that final contract, but it passed. And I'm sure there were teachers who did not vote for that final contract. I think there was an understanding that we were literally the two parties driving that district to a point of no return. If we had stayed on strike another 5 days, we would have lost 100 to 200 students out to neighboring districts because parents were, I need my child to graduate. They're a senior. They're planning at college. We have no idea what's going to happen. So we obviously went into negotiations and we spent a year negotiating. We did interest-based bargaining throughout that whole process. And in the end, we just had this big elephant in the room that we couldn't get around regardless of what process we used. And we resulted in that strike. I do think, we were cutting budgets throughout that whole process. I cut $1 million to $1.5 million from that budget every year I was there for the 3 years. So it was difficult on both sides.
But bringing forward, what do you think you learned and how could you use that?
Well, I've been, as I said in my opening comments, I believe I've been about collaboration and cooperation throughout all my years as a school leader. I've had that experience certainly as I put consolidating school districts together. Somebody's always losing something in that process. Some are more perceived losses than real losses, and I think that's a part of dealing with any situation like this is really trying to clarify what is the end result of that agreed to contract in that case or consolidation, so people really understand that. And like I said, I know we can't please everybody in that situation, board members and teachers alike in that strike situation. I believe we did everything we could as a district. We felt we were in no financial condition to accept the full burden of that health insurance increase without dramatically reducing program offering for students. So we felt we needed to stick to our guns. And again, I think both sides came a little bit closer to each other after that strike did occur.
Margaret.
I appreciate a real-world example because we understand, you understand the stress of governance, and you obviously have been successful. You have a lot of achievements. Now let's focus on you personally as a leader, whether it's in the professional setting or in your volunteer roles. Where did you badly misstep? Where did you not read the tea leaves? Where did you ruffle the feathers that on rethink, oh, I love the smile on your face. But when you think about it, you say, you know, if I could rewind the video, I'd edit it, and here's what I learned. So it's not the collective we, it's I.
I don't know. I'm going to answer it this way, and then you tell me if that's appropriate or if I should try again. And I will go back to the Red Wing situation. You know, perhaps egotistically, I think most school district superintendents believe they can handle that next step. So I was making a career advancement going from West Central Area Schools of about 1,000 students to Red Wing. At that time, 3,400 students. Now I think they're 2,800. So it was a significant move, bigger community, closer to the metro area. Where I failed, I believe I was qualified and ready to handle that responsibility, but I didn't read the tea leaves of what Red Wing had on the horizon. I was told we're coming out of financial problems. It was a different story when I arrived there. I look back. I grew an awful lot. My family loved Red Wing. They weren't appreciative when I said, well, I'm going to take a different position, but I frankly felt I needed a fresh start, and so we enjoyed the community very much, but I failed to read the tea leaves and have a true understanding of where that district was heading the next year to 3 years out. And, of course, a big issue was health insurance, which I didn't find out till after I had accepted the job, and nobody knew it was going to be that significant of an increase. So I think in my position, I could give you many cases where I've ruffled feathers because I have to make recommendations all the time, be it on discipline issues or whatever, that I have two sides of the story, and I know both sides normally don't agree with what I determined to be the path we're going to move forward. But I do try to be as prepared as possible for making that decision, and I think in the Redwing case, I didn't fully understand some of the issues that were going to be present when I arrived there as a district leader.
That would help you be more empathetic as you work with the university president, who won't be perfect either.
Right. Ardell?
Thanks for being here again. It's with the arts. As a superintendent, you know, oftentimes the cuts that happen in the local schools are the arts that are gone. I also know that at the University of Minnesota, a number of the marching band students did not have a high school experience in band anymore. As a regent and for a university, how important is it to have a full arts program as a part of the offering for students?
I think at the university or Belle Plaine High School or any school, I think the best schools have a balance of offering between the arts and academics. And that's something I've worked hard at maintaining, even in light of budget cuts. I still believe our activities, be they athletics, drama, music, are all great programs for students. Many life lessons to be learned, and I think that carries forward to a collegiate setting as well. Those help develop the community of a university, and the reality is we need those creative releases rather than just the academic grind, sometimes, shall I say, all the time. So it's always been my preference to maintain a strong co-curricular program in the arts.
Yeah. Paul.
Kelly, you've been a public school K through 12 educator for literally all of your business career. it provides you with a unique perspective with respect to the size of the communities, the nature of the community. As a regent, how would you help the university do a better job of reaching out to the public school community across the state of Minnesota, mm-hmm. to help to make sure that when those students come to the university that they're as well prepared as possible?
Well, I do know that there have been several P through 16 working groups through the Department of Education and the university systems in Minnesota that have been active. I would certainly call on some of my contacts and experiences as a school superintendent to work with those committees to continue to build that connectivity from K-12 to post-secondary education. You know, I think in the last decade we've seen great changes in that, with really the blossoming of post-secondary enrollment options, where we have students who either take a part-time college course, or some. I had a senior last year enroll full-time at the University of Minnesota, and he excelled down here as a high school senior / college freshman, and those programs are available. We're starting to see a blurring of that line between grade 12 and freshman in the university of schools. Belle Plaine, we offer a number of college-level courses in our high school through concurrent enrollment, so a graduating senior from Belle Plaine can leave our school as a senior without ever having left our school to go to PSEO and have 12 semester credits by the time they graduate. So I think a lot of that infrastructure and programming is in place. Now we need to continue to build that support and knowledge that those programs are out there. Because I think to some degree not all parents are fully aware of those opportunities. And for a family that's struggling financially, if you take away 1 year of college tuition because a student had that opportunity either in their own high school or making the move to a post-secondary institution, that's pretty significant for that family. So I would use my connections and background with the K-12 community to try to move that forward even more.
Thank you.
Lois.
I'd like to ask you to think about your wide swath of Greater Minnesota experience that you outlined in your introduction, and your personal knowledge as well as your family's veterinary school, medical school, et cetera, insight about the strength of various colleges within the University of Minnesota, to address the issue of the University of Minnesota being an economic development driver across the entire state, not just the metro region, and it goes to this question: the definition of outreach and how it interplays with policy on the regent level to encourage outreach that doesn't just get shuffled over to extension, but that enables the best and the brightest from nanotechnology and the biosciences to be reachable and to reach out to Greater Minnesota and robotics, et cetera. I mean, you know, any number of those fields. But talk about economic development from the perspective of outreach on the policy level and getting beyond the metro area in its outreach.
Well, something I think I need to learn more about. Certainly, outreach is one of the missions of the university. It's sometimes... again, I don't have the financial figures to show what percentage of the university budget is outreach, but I suspect it's the smallest part right now. And what most people are familiar with is the extension service. And I think that when I was growing up as a youngster, that was really ag-related and There's been a transition of that program, certainly, that it's much more broad-based, but I think that's still the understanding that a lot of people have, that, oh, that if I have a problem with my apple trees, I should call the extension and they'll help me out with it, and that's what they do. So I think understanding of what extension does, but there are other programs out there. I did attend a regent meeting in June, I believe it was, and they talked about the Itasca project, and which is economic development and collaboration between higher ed institutions and business. And that's part of that outreach project. But I'd never heard of the Itasca project. I probably only told you a snippet of what it's really doing. But that was great information for me to hear that we're moving in other directions other than the extension area. One other experience I did have was through a Center for Small Communities, which was out of the Morris campus. As I arrived at the West Central Area School District, we were putting those communities together as a unified school district. The Center for Small Towns came out. Roger and Carol McCannon were the facilitators from the University of Minnesota Morris and worked with those communities about the economic development sides, pluses and minuses of Huffman losing a school building in their town. And so those are valuable pieces to rural communities as well. So I think it's certainly a strong part of the mission of the University of Minnesota. I think people need to be more made more aware of what is actually happening in that area.
Any more questions? Jerry?
Well, I have one. I'm not sure I've formulated this right now.
We'll tell you if you're wrong.
Please do. And I guess maybe I should preface it, but when I think about, you know, you're applying for an at-large position as a regent, and as you're probably aware, we have regents that are incumbents in that same position. What can you bring to the Board of Regents as a new regent that might be a plus as compared to someone who's already sitting there?
Well, I certainly understand you have two very qualified incumbent regents. I did not, at the time of application, I didn't know who was reapplying and seen any announcement, but certainly wanted to take the opportunity to give it another run here and see where things go. But I go back to certainly Senator Johnson has great experience at the legislature in a variety of fronts, but I have been in education my whole life, and that's something that really is I would bring to the table that I don't believe any sitting regent, not just those two, really have that experience right now. So for me, that's the biggest thing that would separate me from those positions. I think I do have a rural perspective, and Senator Johnson is Wilmer, so he's certainly got that rural perspective as well. That's something that I bring. And I guess as I first really became interested in regent positions 8-9 years ago, I met with Dallas Bonsack, who at that time was the sitting regent, and he felt his piece and niche on the region was that ag community and rural Minnesota, and I know he did a great job representing that, and that's something I don't have his farming background. I lived on a hobby farm but didn't farm like he did, but I think I have that background and understanding that I don't know that many regents have right now as well.
Thank you.
Great.
And I know we asked this question last time, but since we do have some new members here, I'll ask it, and I know that circumstances change over time as well. The minimum requirements, really, or average requirements, maybe, depending on who you ask, are 40 hours a month of unpaid time that varies in terms of days and times and whatever. You have a very big job now that requires a lot of time as well. How would you balance those two?
Well, I think I'll give you the same answer I did last time, although I have, with each time I come back here, I'm closer to retirement. I don't know when that's going to be. But I am at a point in my life where I do have, you know, my wife and I are empty nesters. If I was living in Elbow Lake yet, I probably wouldn't be here, because I don't know that it would work, the time commitment. But Belle Plaine is a 45-minute drive to the university campus. It can be an in and out. I have a supportive school board who believes there would be a benefit to Belle Plaine as well. As well as me personally, to serve as a region, having that connection and understanding what's happening at the higher ed institutions in Minnesota. So, you know, it's hard to answer until it would happen, but I had many conversations with Regent Bonesack about that issue, about the time commitments. Obviously, the meetings are scheduled. Those would not be a problem. It's when you get a phone call to maybe come and help testify or whatever else that duty might be. And I'm sure there's many evening functions that you're to represent the university at, but I enjoy those types of functions. As a school superintendent, you do a lot of that anyway, and it would be transferring some of those to a university perspective, perhaps, rather than a local perspective.
Can I follow up?
Sure.
I'm going to just shift a little bit from that. If you were elected to move forward into that role, mm-hmm. and you had the opportunity to choose your number one committee to serve on and your very last committee of choice, what would those two be?
I'm not sure I remember all the committees offhand, but I've always believed finance has been a strength of mine, and that would probably be something I would feel most comfortable as a starting regent, although that's certainly a different type of budget rather than what I'm dealing with right now. But that would be certainly an area that I enjoy. Policy perhaps is an area that I don't get all excited about policy. Thankfully, I have several board members who are very good at that, and we work together, but that would probably be on the lower end of any preference that I have. As a newcomer, I'm willing to serve on any committee they would put me on.
When you talk about policy being, you know, something you don't necessarily get excited about, do you mean the development of it, or the crafting of it, or the visioning of it, or?
The development, right now, in my position, I am through the crafting of it and the developing of it. I understand that certainly a major function of the board is to set that policy to guide the university. It's something that we do, but it's not something that I would say is my strength. Finance is much more strength.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Could I drill a little bit more there? Along the same lines that Harriet, the conceptualizing of policy is firmly something that happens at all times at the board. I'm wondering if, as you're addressing policy, you're speaking in terms of what is the language in a human relations policy. Is that what you're kind of saying?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Something that would, in all likelihood, be done in the regent circumstance by staff and come back to the board to say, did we accurately bring to paper what you were expressing?
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's maybe a distinction I should have made. That's kind of what I end up doing.
Right, right, yes.
I don't have a policy department in
right,
the district.
Right, yes.
And that's not real exciting work all the time, but it's necessary work, though.
Yes, and yes.
Thank you.
Margaret is on the edge of her
short
seat.
Short but very important question. Once you get through the queue of being a finalist, you need to be over here at the Capitol meeting with 201 state legislators so that they get to know you, will you have the time to move your duties to someone else to take that next step in a real legitimate way?
That will be, actually, that time frame probably is the most challenging of all, is trying to be up here on a regular basis. I will need to use vacation days and circumstances. I will need to use phone calls rather than maybe a personal conversation. I am stopping by a couple of legislators, not to talk university things, but just to make that introduction, a couple new people that I know are in my area. So I have some of those connections at the Capitol already because of my role, but that, very good question. That will, I don't know when that hearing is. You know, I know you make recommendations after tomorrow, I believe. And I hadn't seen anything really published about when the legislative committee would meet with those candidates, but that's going to be a busy period of time. I understand that.
Good question. With that, I would like to move towards closing statements. But before you do, or maybe included in part of your closing statement, I've asked other candidates as well, is there a question that you prepared for that you thought we would ask or you thought we should ask? And if there is an issue or a question, please bring it up as part of your closing statement. Otherwise,
sure. I'll start with that. First, thank you once again for allowing me to come and speak with you. I'm excited about the opportunity to possibly serve as a University of Minnesota Regent. As I've said throughout all my conversation, it's been a institution that's been part of my life since early times, and I continue to enjoy reading what's happening at the university and following up on all aspects whenever I possibly can. As far as questions, I don't know that there was anything that really surprised me. I thought a good question was what has changed, because it's amazing what has changed in 2 years. The conversations 2 years ago, quite different than what's going on today. Certainly finances seems to be that constant right now, and the affordability, but our world is changing so rapidly, and education is as well. We're trying to find what that right delivery for higher ed and all education is, and so that certainly has elevated in the conversation. In closing, I just think throughout the series of questions that you've asked me today, I hope I've conveyed that I have some skills and abilities that I've proven throughout my career as a school administrator that would be transferable to a position as a regent on the University of Minnesota, and I would welcome the opportunity to serve in that capacity. So thank you once again.
Thank you.
Thank you.